The Bloody Podcassacre with Zach Walters and Kennedy Catherine.
Welcome
to
our 60th episode.
Holy crap.
That's insane.
It's not like a monumental number, but it's just crazy.
Well, when you think about 59 movies,
That's so much.
I wouldn't tell you I saw 59 movies in the last 5 years.
And we've done some episodes where it's a double.
We have, yeah.
Oof, that's more.
We were recently asked by one of our listeners, Kim, if we would ever do, I'm bringing it up because you just mentioned it, Haunting of Hill House, the series.
Ooh.
I think it would be difficult to do a series. Mm-hmm. To condense that properly and then also talk about everything because there's so many different beloved moments and characters in that show. I think to do it in a satisfying way, it would have to be like...
a three-part.
Yeah, like a longer-term project. Mm-hmm. That we haven't quite considered taking on yet. But if there's any interest, let us know. And maybe we will consider incorporating a few series into this here little podcast of ours.
That'd be fun. Even like limited series. Because we can't do one that's like...
No.
You know.
I can't sign up to do like the X-Files, yeah. You know?
Oh my gosh. That's too much.
Yeah.
Then you have the spinoff movies. And then you have this and that. And so, no thank you.
And television used to be like 24 episodes a season. That's insane.
I can't.
No.
I don't know what. I got randomly. So, I got fries from McDonald's. And I went 3 free months of Paramount Plus from McDonald's Monopoly.
What?
Crazy. Paramount Plus, if you have never gone through it, the best way to describe it is dad's streaming service.
Oh, really?
It's got like your Top Gun. It's gotten your, it has like all your Mission Impossibles. Like,
it's a Tom Cruise vehicle.
Yes. Yeah. And then it has like some random ones, a lot of kids stuff.
Oh, interesting.
Like all of SpongeBob is on there for Canada.
Got it.
Zoe 101. I know,
dream.
Right? I was like, should I watch it? But all of these things have 24 episodes. And I'm like,
I can't sign up for that.
No.
Sometimes,
8 episodes is like so max.
I was just going to say, sometimes when it's 10 episodes and not 8, I'm like, that's a little much.
Yeah.
That we don't need an extra 2 hours. Commitment. No, no, ma'am.
I would be interested in doing a series. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I kind of want to do, one that we both haven't seen, even if we do 3 episodes, 4 episodes in one halfway point, go to do the second half as episodes 4 to 8, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And that we have like something that we can like kind of predict will happen.
Oh yeah, that'd be fun. That we are following it along. Mm-hmm. As we record.
Yeah.
That is true. That would be a more interesting way of taking something in, I think, than just like, here's this series I watched 3 years ago.
Yeah. That's true. I watched the new Hellraiser. I really enjoyed it. The special effects makeup is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of the Cenobites are so well done. They look so just, like, realistic because of all the prosthetics.
Right.
And, like, the blood on them is so, so good. However, like, the movie itself was a little underwhelming.
Okay.
Like, it was average.
Right.
It kind of felt like it was missing the whole, this is what this movie's about.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of threw you in there and doesn't give an explanation.
Okay.
Would recommend it if you've seen the original. But if you haven't, it's kind of like, why are these people doing this?
And I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So not a good starter film.
No. Terrifier 2 came out. There was like a fan demand on Twitter for it to be put back in theaters. So they've put it back in theaters, but there's been some people who like are really bad with gore, I'm assuming, who have left vomiting.
Sorry, did they put the first one back in?
No, the second.
Oh, okay.
So it was only like a limited run.
Right.
But then people were like, no, we want to see it. So they put it back in. And now people are going. And I think on Twitter, I saw somebody passed out in one theater.
Yeah.
And somebody threw up in another.
Oh my goodness. If you have that extreme of a reaction, mm-hmm. I have to think that you know that about yourself. Why put yourself in the situation at all?
I have put myself in that situation.
You're right. You have.
With Green Inferno. But
yeah.
I thought I had a strong stomach. When you can't, just you can get up and leave, but it feels wrong to in the middle of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about it where you're just like, I'm just going to have to stick it through.
Yeah, I guess you can't really. I felt that way in Mother, but it was more of like an emotional reaction, I think, than mm-hmm. anything. But there's nowhere to turn. There's nothing to do.
Like, because you can put your head in your hands and be like, haha, I can't see it, but you can still hear everything.
Exactly.
Interesting. I'm kind of excited for it.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a clip on Twitter, though, that somebody recorded in theaters and it looks bad. I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast. The Strangers is getting a reboot.
I think we mentioned it.
But they've added an extra character, I don't know, and kind of release more of the plot. The person who directed Nightmare on Elm Street 4 is going to be directing this reboot series.
Oh, great. I really trust the director of Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
I know. The Dream Master was what it was called. It has that girl from Riverdale, a guy from Teen Wolf, and some other guy I've never heard of. Someone from Lord of the Rings has just been added.
Okay, cool.
And I was like, maybe they'll bring the class.
Did you notice the homage to The Strangers in the film we're covering today?
Yes, I did.
Many fun things like
there that. There was. And then randomly, I saw this trailer for a movie called Run, Sweetheart, Run. And I think it's an Amazon Prime movie. But it follows a single mom, Cherry, who's been set up with this guy named Ethan. And they have sushi, partying, and romance. But then there's this unexpected danger that comes along. And
who's in it?
I can't remember. But she's on the run from Ethan, like covered in blood. And she's trying to survive the night. He has some sort of ability to track her through her fear.
Okay, so it's supernatural.
Yes. So I'm kind of excited to see that. I want to say it's Amazon Prime.
Interesting.
And lastly, we have to talk about the one, the only, Megan. Megan is this new horror movie.
I simply cannot explain the visceral excitement that is coursing through my body.
For this movie. It is just like, I can't even describe what it's...
The energy is so confusing. The vibes are confused. I was terrified. I was delighted. I was shocked. I was delighted again in a very
giggly way.
Yeah. A lot of dancing, a lot of TikTok movements.
Yes, acrobats.
100%. Gymnasium dinging.
And terror.
Terror.
Essentially, it's this new doll, AI doll, that's supposed
looks
to...
looks like Renesmee.
Yes, but like a little glowed up with makeup.
Yeah. A yassified Renesmee.
Yeah. 100%. This Megan AI doll is supposed to be a companion or something.
So essentially, it's Marnie from Girls. And
Get Out.
Yeah, I can't remember her name. And she gets custody of who I assume is her niece.
Mm-hmm.
And Marnie has been working on AI and has been part of a project to build this doll who's, I guess, for if you are not quite getting it, it's basically a Chucky. It's supposed to be a children's doll. It's like life size and it walks and talks and does all the things. And as you expect, the machine turns into a monster.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be like something that the AI is supposed to be able to make a friend and like stop bullying. I don't know. There's supposed to be some sort of like bonus to it other than just it being a walking, talking doll.
Right. So like it seems as if Marnie's character is like, your job, Megan, is to protect my niece. And she takes her role a little seriously.
And a little showgirly.
She does have a real showgirl edge about her.
Like, why did they include that scene? Do you think it was directly for marketing?
I have to think they knew it would be memed, that it was a memeifiable moment.
I swear that trailer was out for 4 hours, and I have seen Megan dancing in ABBA music in that hallway just to other songs.
It's pretty impressive, I'm not gonna lie.
I also saw somebody, I might have sent it to you on TikTok, but they were like dressing up as Megan for Halloween and doing the dance in their hallway.
I didn't see that.
Oh, they just put on a blonde wig and did the little leg kick and the faked the tumble.
That's gonna be everywhere.
I know, and I'm kind of excited.
I am too. It actually does look like it looks like a well-made movie.
Yeah.
It just looks kind of, well, it's from the makers of Malignant, and it does have that general vibe where you're
it
like,
kind
this
of is a little choogy.
A little campy.
Yeah.
But it looks like it could be great.
It's kind of like you want to get stoned and go to the theater to watch.
Absolutely. You Let's know? Do that.
Yeah.
I have a friend who basically was like, I don't like inanimate object movies. I don't like when something that isn't supposed to be something becomes something. I don't find it interesting. And then I sent him the trailer and he was like, okay, you know what? That changed my mind.
Interesting. Yeah. I've never like seen that as like a deterrent for movies, but it would make sense.
Yeah, I guess it's just another version of a genre. Like, I'm not a huge monster movie person, but, you know, I prefer paranormal over that. But if it's something is well done, kind of like the movie that we're talking about today, then yeah
you can let it slide a little
for sure.
Lastly, before we get into this movie, I went over to your house once again last night with your roommate when you were not home.
People are gonna wonder if I live at my house.
You don't,
to be fair. For the most part, not really.
And so we were just like kind of having a October Halloween
fall
movie
fest.
Yeah, no idea what we were gonna watch. And then we went in, I was like, should we watch Practical Magic? And your roommate was like, I love this movie.
We got in an actual fight because I was watching a show with my girlfriend. I'm in my room And I walk out to go to the bathroom and she's watching it without me. I literally said, "What the fuck, you fucking bitch." And, you know, that's not language that I condone. And she looked at me like she immediately knew as soon as my door opened. She looked at me like, "Wait, no, I can explain." And I was like, "How dare you? Without me, the first watch of the season." And here, she's done it again. Mm-hmm. We're going to have words when I get home.
So this was the first time I've ever seen it.
And you loved it.
I absolutely loved
it. It's just so good. It is a perfect film.
One, wasn't what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. I think I was expecting it to be more spooky.
Okay.
A little bit. A little darker. It does have its like dark moment. Quote unquote dark moments. It is adding to my list of like movies I'm gonna watch every year.
Oh yeah.
Because also, I've already made
the greenhouse
my background on my phone.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah, everything in that movie is just like the hair. Mm. Incredible. The outfit's incredible. Yes. Honestly, Nicole Kidman and Sandra Bullock, great. Work. So good. The aunt, amazing.
Incredible.
Also, Evan Rachel Wood is the child.
Yeah. Stalker amazing. Channing, Rizzo as the aunt.
There was so many, like, good moments.
It's like a...
It kind of has it all, it honestly. It kind of
does. It's a rom-com, but it's also scary. It's and there's family. Action,
it's fantasy.
It's everything.
It really has it all.
Ghosts.
It does have ghosts.
Possession.
Yeah. Witchcraft.
That's it, baby.
And 10 out of 10 would recommend. And we'll watch again. But do you know what didn't receive the highest endorsement?
What?
The Cabin in the Woods.
I love it.
Okay, to be fair, when I watched this in 2012, I hated this movie.
You need to be in a certain place.
You also need to have somewhat of like a horror background.
Yes, you do.
In which I didn't at the time.
Mm-hmm. It requires even just a passive knowledge mm-hmm. of horror films to kind of understand what's going on.
Yeah.
If you're not a horror fan, you just are not going to get this, the mm-hmm. specific nuances. You might enjoy the movie, but you're not going to get most of the underlying meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember watching the trailer thinking it was going to be like your average scary movie mm-hmm. slasher flick, you know, literal cabin in the woods vibes.
Yes.
When the movie starts, it is so viscerally different from what you expect. And so that threw me off immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't know what I'm watching. And then the last third, I was like, I'm so, like, I feel stupid. Like, I'm like, what am I missing here?
I didn't feel that way at all.
When I first watched it.
Oh, when you first watched it.
But now I watched it yesterday and I had a hell of a time.
It's so fun.
It's so fun. It's like just the right amount of like smarts that they put in there that's like, it knows what it's doing and it does it well.
And you don't have to think about it too hard. Like when we say you have to have like a kind of a working background knowledge of horror films, I mean, you just need to have seen like four horror movies
really.
To understand exactly what they're trying to say. But what they're trying to say isn't deep or like hidden. It's on the nose. You get mm-hmm. it. Yeah.
Back then.
Over my head.
Yeah. Should we get into the little plot?
Let's get into the plot. So in an underground laboratory, engineers Gary and Steve discuss plans for a mysterious ritual after a similar operation in Stockholm has just ended in failure. I just have to say, that beginning was not what I expected. Like,
it really is just thrown in.
They tell you exactly what is going on from mm-hmm. the very beginning.
Yeah.
And when that Cabin in the Woods title comes up, if you are not a person who has seen a trailer, you would be like, but where? Because we're in a laboratory.
Yeah.
So then from there, we meet American college students Dana, Jules, Kurt, Holden, and Marty, who are spending the weekend at Kurt's cousin's cabin in the forest. From the lab, Gary and Steve remotely control the cabin and manipulate the students by intoxicating them with mind-altering drugs that hinder rational thinking. The lab departments take bets on what kind of monster will eventually attack the students. In the cabin cellar, the group finds bizarre objects, including the diary of Patience Buckner, a girl abused by her sadistic family. Dana recites incantations from the diary and inadvertently summons the zombified Buckner family. The lab releases pheromones to induce Kurt and Jules to have sex outside. They're attacked by the zombies and Jules is decapitated while Kurt escapes. Marty discovers concealed surveillance equipment in his room before being dragged off by a zombie. The lab workers learn that other rituals have failed, meaning that this is humanity's, quote, last hope. Kurt, Holden, and Dana attempt to escape in their RV, but the lab triggers a tunnel collapse to block them. Kurt tries to jump a ravine on his motorcycle to seek help on the other side, but crashes into an electric force field and falls to his death. Holden and Dana then realize that their experience is being controlled. As they try to escape in the RV, Holden is killed by a zombie, and Dana is attacked when the RV crashes into the lake. Seeing that Dana is the only survivor, the lab celebrates the success of the rite, but are interrupted by a phone call from the director, revealing that Marty is still alive. He saves Dana and takes her to a hidden elevator that he's discovered. They descend into the lab where they discover a large collection of different monsters locked in cages. Dana realizes that the objects in the cellar determined which monsters were released. Cornered by security personnel, the pair release all the monsters, which wreak havoc and slaughter the staff. Dana and Marty flee and discover an ancient temple where they're confronted by the director. She explains that worldwide annual rituals of human sacrifice are held to appease the, quote, ancient ones, a group of cruel subterranean deities. Each region has its own ritual, and the American ritual involves the sacrifice of 5 slasher film archetypes: the whore, the athlete, the scholar, the fool, and the virgin. The order of the killings is arbitrary, as long as the whore dies first and the virgin dies last or survives. The director urges Dana to kill Marty to complete the ritual and spare humanity. When final monsters surprisingly descend, Marty proceeds to kill them and the director. Deciding that humanity is not worth saving at the price of human sacrifices, Dana apologizes to Marty for almost killing him, and the two share a joint while awaiting their fate. The temple floor collapses, and a giant hand emerges from the ground, destroying the facility and the cabin as the world ends.
The thing that I remembered most about this movie mm-hmm. is two specific scenes. The first one is the ending, where the floor collapses and the hand comes out. Mm. That really stuck with me for some reason. In my mind, I also thought that at the end we saw somebody walking around. Like, I thought there was, like, a 50-foot tall person walking around.
Okay.
In my mind. It didn't happen.
Like, across the earth?
Yeah.
Oh, got it.
The second one that I vividly remember, when the unicorn appears mm-hmm. as one of the released animals from the cage and is killing the workers, is when the unicorn takes its horn and repeatedly stabs this man in the stomach.
Yeah.
And it is the most, like, kind of out of left field horror aspect, because how many unicorn horror movies have we ever had?
None.
Exactly. And so it's just like, that's the one that like really stuck with me, because I was like, I have never seen that before, and I don't know if I want to again.
Right, because the collection of monsters are all things that we like pretty much know and understand. Yeah. In fact, there's a few that are certain homages to other horror mm-hmm. films, like not dead on. They're all like kind of rented store versions yes. of like the people from The Strangers. We have a Freddy versus Jason kind of slasher, and then Pinhead. Mm-hmm. A few little things here and there that are supposed to be other things, and then just like a merman and a unicorn and things that are not historically used. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
When doing research for this movie, somebody on the Cabin in the Woods Wikipedia, the dedicated, it's a bunch of stuff for each character, not just the regular Wikipedia, it's like a fandom one.
Okay.
Made a list of every monster from frame by frame that they could find.
How many is there?
I want to say that there is 70 different ones. Mm.
The amount of work that probably went into illustrating and all like, of that shit.
It would be so much. One of my favorite ones is that there's a giant alley cat. it just is a cat that sits in its little prison.
Yeah.
There's also, like I said, the giant snake. We had zombies, scarecrow folk. Apparently there's also Ku Klux Klan members.
Ooh, a choice.
Yep, a hell lord, Sasquatch, reptiles, a snowman. We had the clown. There's the twins from The Shining.
I noticed them, yeah.
Yeah, there's just like a lot of things. A lot of them we don't see also because that's just on the betting board originally. I would prefer not to die in that mess.
I would agree.
Like, I would rather be in the cabin.
I don't know about that. I think if you die in the mess, it's all pretty quick. You're going to be scared, but you're going to be scared for about 0.2 seconds.
You're right.
The part about the cabin is that it's all set up for you to feel terrified in this ritual. My question to you then is, mm-hmm. what monster do you want to kill you at that point?
The unicorn.
I think I'm going to go merman. There's something about that I think would just feel right for me.
Okay. Yeah. Also, the thing that, like, when he had blood coming out of the blowhole.
I loved it.
I forgot. And that was just a wonderful little surprise.
There's just so many delightful little moments. Mm-hmm. I love the characterization of the monsters. I love the characterization of everybody who works in the lab. I thought that they were comedic genius when they're on the phone
with... The speakerphone? Yeah.
Mordecai? Or I might fully be making that up.
Yeah, it's something like that.
The guy at the gas station who's basically speaking in riddles about the end of the world, and they have him on speakerphone and they're laughing at him. That was a great moment. The dialogue is really funny. Mm-hmm. I think that's a Joss Whedon thing. Just overall, a stunning film and a great Halloween movie because it hits on almost every genre.
Mm-hmm. It really does. Yeah. You have like your comedy. Mm-hmm. You have your like teen scream. You have your monsters.
Got gore.
You got some gore. You have like your spook and like unsettling feelings of like the cabin.
Jump scares.
Yeah. You have your like really supernatural and like weird elements. Mm-hmm. It has it all.
And then it's also kind of sci-fi-y mm-hmm. in some ways.
And kind of like a mystery.
Right.
Because you don't fully understand what's happening until probably like, I don't know, a third of the way through. Because you're kind of just like trying to piece them together at first. And then you're like, oh, I see.
So speaking of not really understanding what's happening in the movie, I've basically like pieced together everything that happens and the way that it all works out. So let's walk through it. So the rules, as we know, is that the group has to be sacrificed and they have to have the following character stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And it depends on the region that we're working within. So like every country is basically trying to have a sacrifice. And then if they're able, then we're good. The old gods are good to go, but everyone else has failed. So we're relying on the American setup right now. So they have to sacrifice the athlete, the virgin, the scholar, the whore, and the fool. Like we said, the whore needs to die first. And before she does, she needs to disrobe.
Classic.
Classic. The group needs to split up. The virgin needs to suffer, but her death is optional. If she does die, it should be at the end. So those are the leading set of rules that the ancient gods want in place for their entertainment in America. How it went down. The group was not random, and neither was their destination. So the cabin was an appointed destination that belongs to a, quote, cousin who we later realize never existed. He was just part of the lab's influence. We don't know who this cousin is. We don't know what part he played in convincing them to get there. We don't know how Kurt, who formerly didn't have a cousin, suddenly believed he did, but that's what the lab is doing. The man at the gas station mentions that many have come to the cabin in the past, revealing that the cabin is the stage. Every once in a while, a group of select people are coaxed into spending the weekend there. Various characters need to play their parts on the stage, and the tech team has access to gases that can influence decisions, including making the weekend trip happen at all. So there's a number of theories as to why things go down the way that they do. Theory number one is that the ancient ones intended to end the world at this point all along.
Okay.
The ancient ones were outraged at the way that the organization was gathering sacrifices. The reason for the sacrifices was for them to show the humans that the ancient ones were in control of them. But the director and the organization concocted this elaborate system to select and provide sacrifices so that they had complete control over the process. They were basically overtaking the ancient ones' powers, using chemicals to manipulate the sacrifices' free will. They were feeling a little too safe. They were even being disrespectful of their sacrifices, making bets on who survived, and whining about the lack of certain monsters. The ancient ones decided to end the world, but first they needed to remind the organization who was pulling the strings. They used Marty and Dana as pawns, ensuring that they survived long enough to lay waste to the organization's headquarters. It also explains why the big red button was right there. The ancient ones wanted Dana and Marty to find the button quickly. And Marty's, quote, decision not to save the world may not have been his stubborn choice as much as he was being manipulated to choose not to die. Like when Kurt was chemically manipulated to suggest the group splitting up.
Yeah.
The people in the organization even went through the same mistakes that the sacrifices had. They ignored the warnings and they selected, quote unquote, their own deaths through their betting system. It was all to show the organization that they were wrong to feel safe and snug in their position. The issue with this theory is that the movie makes it very clear that the ancient ones are perfectly apathetic about mankind. So why would they care about the quality or respect of the sacrifices, especially when you consider that it was established that in ancient times, they just basically rounded people up to slaughter them on sacrificial tables. So how is that less manipulative than what the organization was doing? And I think it's also mentioned that the ancient ones are in like a quote, eternal slumber.
Yeah, that just got fed like blood.
So I like that theory. There's a lot behind it, but I don't think there's a ton of truth to it.
Yeah, I do like the idea of them also being like the people who are running the show are also just part of the whole system with the gods. I'm just like, it's very intriguing. It's a good theory.
Mm-hmm.
Because like the way that like it sounds like, oh yeah, that makes total sense.
Right.
But then you're right where it's like, why would the ancient ones
care?
And like, why do they just want these little sacrifices from all over the world?
And you know what else doesn't really make sense to me is like, why is it that those specific chosen sacrifices have to die?
Mm-hmm.
If the organization is the one choosing them, I don't get the impression that the ancient ones are involved in the decision-making process. Mm-hmm. The organization is just facilitating that. So if all of these people get slaughtered by these monsters at the end, why is it that Marty has to die?
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking while I was watching. We've now also slaughtered multiple more people. Is that not good enough?
Tens and tens. Why doesn't that count for something?
I don't know. But I did see that the total body count of bodies that hit the floor during the movie's runtime is 69. But if you wanted to count the whole death toll, the population in 2009 for the world was 6.8 billion.
So maybe the highest body count in horror movies ever.
Potentially. Everybody died.
Everyone's dead. So theory number two is that this is essentially just a classic love letter to the genre.
Mm-hmm.
They take the horror movie tropes we're accustomed to and then turn them into a clinical formulaic operation that needs to satisfy our sadistic need for suffering. They use the lab's newbie, the man who refuses to bet on the fate of the victims, as an example of an audience member who is not accustomed to this form of brutal sadistic entertainment.
Do you know what's interesting also, just a side note, is that his character is named Truman. And it's kind of similar to the Truman Show where he's placed into
like a simulation,
of not knowing what's going on. And he's the only one.
Interesting. But then he has a sort of moral turn, which invites the audience to get off of the ride, though the victims are still on board. It even gives you hope with the tunnel demolition. But the brutal hopelessness finally sinks in with the RV. And the final act turns the whole thing on its head by introducing the victims to the audience. And then bashes who's ever still standing over the head with the Sigourney Weaver explanation of the progression of every slasher movie.
I forgot she was in this movie.
Dude, when I heard her voice, I was like, is that?
I literally was like, and I like did a little gasp and I was like, wow.
It is.
It was originally supposed to be Bruce Campbell.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Also would have been
good. That would have been great, yeah. Too.
Either one is perfect,
though. I do like that it's a woman because we just love that. But Bruce Campbell would have been really fun for certain audiences, too. So theory number three, which is mostly the confirmed theory, is that this film is an essay about the current state of horror films. The audience is represented by the old gods. Our tastes have evolved from, quote, women getting thrown into volcanoes, but our tastes are still pretty simple. The directors are not portrayed as artists, but guys just having fun with their jobs. They can't exactly be creative and have to stick to pretty rigid plans to appease, quote, us. This is the message about today's horror. We're just telling the same stories in different ways with the basic differentiator of how people get killed. The last third is something we have never seen before. Of course, this frustrates the old gods because it is unlike what they are used to, meaning that those who complained about the end of this movie clearly missed the point of the movie.
Me.
Cabin in the Woods ends as if to say, if you don't like this ending, then you're the problem with horror. No one can try anything new because people just don't like it. The journey these characters have been on affects them in a way that impacts the decisions they make and makes it possible for them to survive. Again, this angers the old gods because in their eyes, horror, quote, shouldn't be about character development or stories changing based on character traits. The audience itself is the barrier to more complex stories.
One thing, I know that he described it, Josh Whedon described it as a loving hate letter.
Yes.
Which is like ideas that like excite us, but then we hate what they become.
That's a complaint that I always have too. I felt that way a lot about audience reactions to Malignant is that it had a setup that people really liked and there was components that people liked, but then because it wasn't
formulaic to what we know is like people don't like it.
They were upset.
Mm-hmm. And it's so hard because I have the same feelings about Nope, where it is new and fresh, but I don't like it. But yeah, it's just very interesting overall how with horror being such a limited like field, there's not that many subgenres. Well, actually, there is quite a bit when you really, really break it down.
Right. But when we look at things that are classically celebrated and popular, they're all very similar in a lot of ways.
But it's just crazy that we're like, as soon as anything new comes, it's like, I don't know about that one.
Right.
I think I'm just going to let that one slide. We're going to pretend it exists.
Right.
Like, that was exactly how I wrote off this movie.
So then we'll just make like 7 of The Conjuring.
Yeah.
And that's great. It's like, no, it's just making that part of your brain that mm-hmm. needs to identify a pattern more comfortable. So you tell yourself, well, this was shitty, but it wasn't shitty. You just didn't get it at the time.
Mm-hmm. Or, like, we're just stupid.
That, too.
And you're kind of self-centered. Am I calling myself out? Is this a therapy session?
We're for stupid, and you're kind of self-centered. Like, okay, Alanis Morissette, throw it down.
One thing that, like, I was reading is that a lot of horror films today with characters, there's, like, a lot of, like, not as interesting characters, and they're just more vehicles to take us from, like, scare to scare.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas this one... they're like kind of fully developed characters
yeah.
because they have to be.
I would say the smart guy, the scholar, is the least interesting.
Jesse Williams, Grey's yeah. Anatomy.
Yeah, but for the most part, they're all really fun to watch mm-hmm. and they feel bigger than the average stereotypical like jock or whatever. Yeah. And I think the sort of, it's a fast evolution because we only are with them for a small amount of time, mm-hmm. but the slow evolution of us watching them become more and more the archetype that they're supposed to fit into. Like Kurt gets more of like a testosterone bro and yeah. Jules dyes her hair blonde and Holden starts wearing glasses in the middle of the movie. Mm-hmm. Those things are so fun to see because we can, as an audience who doesn't know the characters that well, still identify like something feels wrong.
Yeah. I texted you this when I finished watching it, but this is very reminiscent of a Scooby-Doo movie.
100%.
Like every character, you have Fred, Daphne, you have Marty, who is literally, this is where I came from. Marty is Shaggy.
Yes.
Fred is Kurt. Mm-hmm. Dana
is Velma.
Yeah.
Jules is Daphne.
Yeah. And then I don't know where Jesse Williams falls into
well,
this.
Well, Jesse is Williams would actually be very, like, also Velma-y.
That's where I was putting him. Then mm-hmm. I was like, I feel like he just needs to be Scooby.
Yeah, but he's sure. not. For symmetry.
Yeah. So, but it's, like, literally, like, them finding this horror thing, figuring it out, and then realizing that it's just, like, someone underneath the mask.
Yeah, exactly. That's all it is.
It's a grown-up Scooby-Doo mm-hmm. without the actual characters. And I kind of love it for that.
I do, too.
Did you notice that in the failed rituals, it's kind of fast, but I just saw it online, is that they're all references to old movies as well?
Well, I definitely picked up on the Japanese one.
Right, because it's The Ring.
Yeah, that was maybe the only one that I picked up on.
I don't know why I didn't clue in until like it actually like was about to happen, but the meme of the evil is defeated where she's holding the frog...
Uh-huh.
Well, I use that meme all the time. When one of our friends was exiled from our group and they were booted out of the group chat, I put the evil has been defeated.
Wait, from this movie?
Yeah.
And you just didn't realize?
I like completely forgot that it was from
this.
That's
so funny.
And it was like about to happen. I was like, the You're evil like, oh has my God. Been defeated.
A full circle moment.
It was really great. So I was like, this adds in a couple extra mm-hmm. notches.
Love to see it.
But the Buenos Aires ritual is a reference to King Kong. The Stockholm ritual is a reference to John Carpenter's The Thing, and the Madrid yeah. reference appears to reference Dracula.
Okay, that makes sense.
But like it's one of those things where they just kind of show us like the location with the name, mm-hmm. and you're more reading the name without looking what has happened because it's all a wreck.
Yeah.
But very, very interesting.
I have a question.
Yes.
Who were you rooting for?
Marty. He was my favorite.
Marty was by far my favorite. I loved him. I identified with him. But I also loved the guys in the lab. Not to the extent that I like needed them yes. to live or win necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I just didn't want them to die. Because I was really loving what they were bringing to the table.
They had such a good like relationship and like banter back and forth.
So good.
They've been doing it for like, what, 50 years it seemed like?
Yeah.
Like they went to high school together. They found these jobs that their dads got them. Their dads used to do together. And now they have to carry the legacy on.
Yeah, and they've started the betting pool. Yeah. And like they're kind of the guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They've been there forever. Everyone knows. They
Steve go for and Gary.
Beers. Yeah. And so I do agree that they both are great characters. Why can't I remember Redhead's name?
Dana,
yes. I also liked her.
I liked her, but I was slightly indifferent to her in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, she kind of, it felt like because she had to be that stereotype at the end, or like that archetype, that I kind of just like didn't really vibe with her being like almost the final girl in a way. But that also is another thing, is we don't have a final girl in this movie.
We certainly do not.
So
nobody is the final girl.
No, which is kind of fun.
We're all the dead girls.
One, so I like kind of was trying to find some background on this movie, and there's a lot about Marty and his character and just like him as a person. Fran Kranz is his name, which is kind of a tongue twister.
Honestly, that makes me like him even more.
Right? In the movie, he is always wearing baggy clothes because on set, they said that he was ripped like a muscular Jesus. And
what? He
was in better shape than Jesse Williams and Chris Hemsworth.
I would not have thought that.
No. So they had to put him in baggy clothes to hide his physique.
I love that.
And so
that is a fun fact.
They had to give him the baggy clothes because if he would have had those like characteristics, we would have like put him into being this higher tiered character, and it would have ruined it completely, because you'd be like, well, this weed stoner guy can't be,
people who smoke weed ain't ripped.
Yeah, exactly. He also got like extensive prop and behavior training for smoking weed because he like didn't do it. So he had a 2-hour joint rolling session learning how to roll joints.
I have so much affection for this
and
man.
And then also a separate bong lighting session with expert consultants. It's probably just a bunch of teens smoking weed. And the bong was $5,000 that they like used.
That one that's like the
collapsible cup. One.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I like wanted to look into see where I can get me one of those.
I'm sure you could probably buy it at one of the 500 weed shops in Canada.
You're probably right.
He also was given a famous travel mug bong, more subtle marijuana paraphernalia. He also had a secret stash for his character, which no one else knew about, which is a smaller pipe, a tulip joint, and a joint kept in the pocket of his pants, which is the one he pulls out later.
Love it.
I just like, also, it's the cherry on top of the movie when they pull out a joint and just smoke it at the end of the world.
It's such a good, to me, it's relatable. It's exactly what I would want to be doing. If the world was ending, I would just pick the closest available person that I had any affection for and be like, let's just sit and enjoy this moment together. Yeah. That's all we got like, time what? For.
We can't run, we're shit.
No.
Like, if it was happening
baby,
right now.
I'm not outrunning this shit.
No.
They're destroying the whole world.
Yeah.
Bye.
I'm just going to sit here and enjoy it.
I did say, though, when the monster started coming out, if I was in that situation where I was like, death is imminent and it's going to be terrible, there was guns in that place. I would have just...
That one woman who shot herself in the head?
Exactly.
I was like, that honestly would have been me.
100%.
I don't want to watch people being slaughtered
either. The amount of times that we have said on mic that we'd essentially commit suicide is startling. But in this context...
It's the situation.
Yeah.
We're okay.
Nobody do a wellness check. We are fine.
So there's not quite a lot about how the movie... And, like, the sets were made. The only thing is that a lot of the control room screens that they were using were actually synchronized to the live events. They filmed in an actual office space at night. So they would only be able to shoot at night. It had not a, like, gigantic budget that, like, a normal Hollywood movie would get. So all of the monitors were synced. And so instead of using a green screen, they had the characters acting and the cameras... We're capturing it and putting it to the screens in the other room.
Oh.
So none of it's green screen.
That is very interesting.
And I'm like, it still looks, I'm sure that they probably, magic. They were like very happy that they were able to do it successfully. Because you have to have multiple cameras because they had so many screens.
Right.
And yeah, just like having, literally it's just a room full of monitors. What office has that? Like, are you filming in NASA?
I was just about to say a space station, or I guess like a security area.
But like even that, it's like what? Security, you have like a small monitor.
I mean, it could also be like a news station.
That's true.
Or something where they're filming like a big...
like the Oscars, they have those.
Well, yeah, but they also have them in like standard news stations or television stations. It's the control room.
The control?
Yeah, that it looked like one.
Wow, wow, wow. Yes, I have a note about the wolf tongue that Anna Hutchinson, aka Jules, gives her little makeout kiss to.
Oh my God, right. That part disturbed me.
It goes on for too long.
It does.
And it's a little too much contact. The wolf's tongue and the wolf itself... were covered in powdered sugar.
We should explain that at one point in the movie, Jules, the blonde character, she gets dared to make out with a taxidermied wolf that's bolted to the wall.
Which Marty does not think it's a wolf. What did he first call it?
I don't remember.
But he's like, you have to make out with that undiscernible animal on the wall. And they're all like, a wolf.
A wolf, Marty.
Anyways, so when she's making out with this, they put a bunch of powdered sugar into the fur and as well as on the tongue to make it look more dusty, but that it wasn't actual dust. Mm. So when she goes and touches it, it's like, looks like it's dusty, but it's not.
Right.
Tongue was made out of silicone and was able to be removed, so it was okay. Like cleansed and everything.
It wasn't a real wolf tongue. Thank God.
But that is just one of those things where I'm like, could you imagine? You're like, you show up for work and they're like, you're gonna be making out with that.
No, I would say not today.
I'd be like, I'm going home, it's a sick day.
I have
very much
tuberculosis and I don't know how it's gonna go down.
I'm so probably gonna,
don't expect to hear from me.
Yeah,
it's Oregon Trail time. I guess one critique that I do have in retrospect, there were so many cool monsters, so many entities, so many things they had. Why did they settle on the redneck family?
I don't know.
They weren't that interesting.
No. And I wish that maybe it would have been like they dealt with them and then another thing came.
That's kind of what I thought was going to happen. I didn't realize that when they started fucking with the objects that it was going to be like whoever commits the most time to their object and like sees that through is going to be the one that unleashes it. I kind of thought it was going to happen incrementally and that everyone's object was going to be represented in a monster and kill them at some point.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish it had gone down that way.
I know, me too. And, like, it's nice that we do have that interaction with Marty and, like, the pinhead-related guy where he realizes Kurt is that was what he was holding. Mm-hmm. But it would have been nice to have, like, more of those characters come into the cabin.
I agree.
Because even, like, we were at, like, essentially the Evil Dead cabin.
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Nothing came of that. Mm-mm. Although it wouldn't be the Evil Dead remake cabin. I was thinking the remake in my head. Which I would really like to do on the podcast.
We should do it. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah. I've just been having like after watching this, I was like, I kind of want to watch. Oh, I wish that they would have incorporated more of those things. Because then having Bruce Campbell come in the end would have just been the cherry on top.
Sigourney Weaver works.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Once again, love it. But Bruce Campbell, I think the thing about Bruce Campbell
is he brings the kind of comedic element of horror into it.
And I also think that would have been like a very clear, this is a love letter to horror movies, where Sigourney Weaver, though she has been in horror, she's an alien, Ghostbusters, all of that. I think the wow factor is more that it's Sigourney Weaver than it is like a prolific person of horror.
Yeah. And also someone who like does satirical horror.
Yeah. And I love that she was the first credited. That made me LOL.
I was like, absolutely. As she should. Yeah.
Should we rate it?
Yeah. It's going to be tough.
I'm not going to say that there aren't jump scary.
There is.
Unsettling moments in this movie. But in terms of scary, I would say, oh, that's hard.
Because it has like those moments for everybody. It has something like, I was terrified of the snake scenes. I hated them. The clown scene was terrifying a little bit. But then you have things where like, I wouldn't find it scary, but someone else would.
I agree. I think on a first watch, a 5.
Yeah.
Like, it can really go either way.
Middle of the ground.
As a person who was watching it and really enjoying the comedic elements of it, it was more of, like, a 2 or a 3.
Yeah. The one thing that, like, really got me that was, like, not so scary but, like, gross was the use of the one redneck with the bear trap and how he kept...
Oh, fuck, yeah. That was nasty. Getting people on
the back and would, like, pull them up and drag them. The idea of having a bear trap in my back...
No,
not on my watch.
Not on my watch.
It's not in my bingo list for any year. Unsettling?
2.
Yeah.
Didn't stick with me.
No.
I thought about it a lot because I enjoyed it, but it wasn't scary to me in that way.
Yeah, no, other than the bear traps.
Story, I gotta go 10.
I'm gonna give it a 9.
Yeah.
Just because there's still like the thing where I'm like, I have a hate for it still. That's 1%.
You have your first impression hatred. Understood.
And so, but I'm like at a 9.
Okay.
It is a fun movie.
And the story is well developed. It doesn't require you to think too hard. It's all there for you. So, is it a paper cut or is it a bloody massacre?
I think I'm going to say, I think it's a bloody massacre.
I think it's a
69 bodies on the floor massacre.
69 bodies on the floor, 3 out of 4 bloody blowholes. We're like 3.
Please welcome to the stage.
Bloody blowholes. We're calling this episode Bloody Blowholes.
Ew.
That's so upsetting. Yeah, no, it's a bloody massacre for sure. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. I think I would like really recommend it to everybody.
Me too. Point. It's just fun.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm glad we're all on the same page.
Okay, well, you know, join us again in a few weeks where, no spoilers, but we are going to review the latest of the Halloween movies, because apparently it ends tonight.
Well, they said that last time, exactly. But now it's in the title, so.
Give us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Follow us on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram at Podcastacre. You can send us an email at thebloodypodcastacre@gmail.com. Let us know how you feel about the idea of us covering some series. Is there any series that you want to hear about? I think that's it. That's all, kids. Until next time.
You think you know the story.